Welcome to Headlines. This is Avi Kahan sitting in for David Lichtenstein. It's an amazing privilege, amazing schuss again to host the show on topics that there are so many listeners listening to. Before we start the show, I want to give a very, very important announcement. David Lichtenstein had the schuss to put out a Sefer Mishnah Acharina on Mishnah Berurah. It's two volumes. It's a fascinating, fascinating Sefer where he brings the modern-day Shilas, the Poskim that discuss it. Remember, we have to remember the Mishnah Berurah was written over 100 years ago. There are many new Shilas, and how do we apply those Shilas from the Mishnah Berurah Pesukim? It's a Sefer that's a must-have in everyone's house. You can't find it in stores anymore, but you could email headlinesbook.com. The two volumes are going for only $20. See if you could still get them. It's a must-have Sefer in your house. This week we will be having a very, very interesting show. We'll be discussing the topic of what Rabbanim do, what goes on behind the scenes when a Rav issues a Psak. Is a Rav just opening up a Kitzer Sefer, seeing what the Gedolei Poskim from the previous generation says and issuing a Psak? Or is there a deeper Shikul Hadas? And we'll be interviewing some Chashuv Rabbanim to hear their cheshbon of how they issue a psak, what's a psak that they give out for the tzibur, what are psaks that they give out only for individual people that they don't want repeated, what goes on. Before we get into the air, I want to share a very, very small riddle on this week's parsha, which I think is an important riddle and an important question. We all know that the last mishnah in Yuma, Daftehem at Beis, brings down Amar Rabbi Akiva, Ashreichem Yisrael, praiseworthy is Yisrael, is Kal Yisrael, if nei mi atem mitarim, mi mitar eschem, who do we get to become tar in front of? Avichem shebashamayim, shenemar, vizarakti aleichem mayim torim vitihartem, v'omar mikva Yisrael, ma mikva mitaris atmeim, apakadish baruch hu mitaris Yisrael. Just like a mikva's mitar people who are tameh, so to akadish baruch hu's mitaris Yisrael. The question is, these two psukim are both psukim in Navi. And it seems like Rabbi Akiva had to go find Psukim and Navi to say how chashuv it is, how praiseworthy is Kali, so that we get to become tar in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The question is that it's often a pasuk in this week's parsha. In this week's parsha, the pasuk says in Perek Tezayin, pasuk Lamed, Ki bayoyim hazeh, yichaper aleichem, letar eschem, yikol chateisechem, lefnei Hashem titaru. On this day, you could come in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you could be metar yourself from all the averus in front of Hashem, you'll become tar. Why did Rabbi Akiva go and find a parsha, a pasuk in Navi, when there's often a pasuk in this week's parsha? That is the riddle for this week. Back to our topic. Our topic is going to be discussed what goes on behind the scenes. I want to share just a small vart. Of course, we're waiting to hear from the Chashuv Rabbanim, but I want to just share a very, very, very interesting small vart. There's a Balatanya, and it's like the Dhamma to Sefer Atanya. He says something interesting, which he doesn't explain, which really the source for this is a Zayar in Parshas Pinchas. It says that there are two types of people in Klal Yisrael. There are those who are machmer, and there are those who are mekel. He says, and each one comes from a different, he says, of course, elu ve'elu divrei l'kiyum chayim, and each one comes from a different koyach haneshama. The ones who are mekel, their sheirish haneshama comes from the midah of chesed. And the ones who are machmer, their sheirish haneshama comes from the midah of gvura. The Baal Tanya doesn't go on to explain if chesed is bigger than gvura, gvura is bigger than chesed. But there are two different sheirish nishmasim, which causes people to paskin a certain way. Those who are machmer, paskin, come from the sheirish nishmasim of gvura, and those who are mekel come from the sheirish nishmasim of chesed. There's a very interesting Avnei Zakarin. The Avnei Zakarin was one of the Lublina Ravs, was actually Ein Kol Reb Kiveger. He wrote a small kuntras when his son was very sick. His name was Alter Azriel Meir Eger in Lublin. He wrote a small kuntras called Avnei Zakarin, mainly on Bab Mitzi and Ezeu Neshech. And over there, towards the end of Ezeu Neshech, he's going on the mission that discusses Sa B'Sa, which is the concept of Ribbis, which we're not going to get into now. But Sa B'Sa, if we're Mekel or we're Machmer. And Beishama is Mekel on Sa B'Sa, the Chacham are also Mekel, and Beis Hillel is Machmer. In fact, Avnei Zakarin, we always find that Beis Hillel, that Hillel is more Mekel than Beishama. How come in this situation of Ribbis, is Beis Hillel more Machmer? That's Avnei Zakarin's question. And he quotes a very interesting Sefer Chassidim. The Sefer Chassidim, the Oish Reish Tzadiches, brings down that the reason why Hillel wasn't Geizer Gzeris like Beis Shammai, especially the Gzeris and Sechta Shabbos, wasn't because he didn't feel that Siyagim are important. Basil just felt that he was going to go be guys in these gzeres. And ain hat tzibur yechel lamed boy. The tzibur is not going to be able to do these gzeres. They're going to throw off these gzeres, and they're also going to throw off kol ha'terek kula. They're going to say, once I'm not doing these gzeres, I might as well not do ikra hadin also. So therefore, Beis Hillel, it could be he felt that tziyogim are important, but in this situation, for a colleague, so he felt not to do it. It was a cheshvan Hillel took. He wasn't just not being makel and not making gzeres. It was a cheshvan, is Kali Sol going to be able to do it, and what's going to happen if they're not going to do it? Says the Avnei Zakarin, Hillel's mahalach was always to try to help people. And therefore, usually, as a general rule from his Avas Yisrael, trying to help people, he ended up being makel in certain cases. But in Ribbis, from his Avas Yisrael in Ribbis, helping someone he felt to go be machler. Because Ribbis is, in definition, taking more money than you gave somebody. Someone needed a loan, someone needed something, and in order for him to get that loan, you charge them for that loan. That is, in essence, the Issa Ribbis. And therefore, Hillel felt to go be machler, his Avas Yisrael, his midah that he always used to go be makel for everybody, that midah told him to go be machmer in this case, to go make sure someone else doesn't lose more money. So it's the same mahalach ha-chaim that Hillel and Beis Hillel has, he writes, the same mahalach ha-chaim that caused him in certain cases not to make siyogim, to be makel, in this case to be makel. So we see over here that it's not just how they learned the sugyo, how they paskin, there was something behind the scenes that went on before Beis Hillel or Beis Shammai gave their psak. Another very interesting nekuda, which is a fascinating story. This is a story printed in the Sefer Aleil Lo Yibol, and I verify the story many years ago by Reb Shmuel Orbach and by Reb Avigdor Nevenzahl. The Sefer of Aleil Lo Yibol brings down that Reb Shlomo Zalman Orbach wrote a kuntres in Medani Aretz. He wrote a kuntres called Lafushe Me Isura, to distance yourself from Isser. What was the Sefer, the small kuntres that he wrote, Lafushe Me Isura? In the times of Reb Shlomo Zalman lived a very chashuv yid named Reb David Baran, one of the gedolei poskim of Yerushalayim. And Reb David Baran had a big kula, where he saw so many people being nichshol, transgressing and eating tevel, which is fruit or vegetables that trumas and maisis have not been taking off. And therefore, he had a mahalach. He had a way to take off trumas and maisis for all the fruits and vegetables in Eretz Yisrael. He used to go to the dumpster. He used to make a cheshbon in the dumpster, a calculation that in the dumpster you find is every single type of fruit, every single type of vegetable. He was zeiche, the adam shalei befanav, he was zeiche this for other people. And then he went and he took off trumas and maisis. He had a whole cheshbon to save people from the isser of tevel. And Reb Shlomo Zalman strongly disagreed with this cheshbon. Reb Shlomo Zalman so much so he ended up writing a kuntres against Lafrusha Mesur that no one should be saying on this. In the Sefer Leil Yibol, the Mechaber brings down that someone one time bought him a watermelon from a place that he felt didn't take off Truman Semaises properly. And he bought this watermelon for him for Shabbos. He bought it on Erev Shabbos. For Shabbos that the person could serve it for dessert. The person forgot to take off Truman Semaises Erev Shabbos. On Shabbos we know we don't take off Truman Semaises. It's Mesak and Mana. And the person came to Shlomo Zalman on Shabbos. He said, I'm going to embarrass my neighbor when he comes over to me and he asks me to serve the watermelon that he bought. And I'm going to say, I can't serve it because I don't rely on that store that you bought it from. So Shlomo Zalman turns to me and says, I don't understand the issue. There was a Yidur, David Baran, who had a mahalach. He had a way to take off Trumas and Mises for the whole entire Eretz Yisrael. Let's go be Shlomo David Baran. So the Yidur turned to Shlomo Zalman and said, but the Rav himself wrote a kuntres against this David Baran. He says, yeah. But this is Machloekas HaPoiskim, myself and Reb David Baran. And this is a Shasat Chag. And in the Shasat Chag, we are Soymich, a Filo on a Das Yochid. And therefore, that means the person who's Machmer, who holds himself that this is wrong, also has to be Soymich. It's a Pele de Kazach. Reb Shlomo Zalman argued, wrote a conscious, but he went to go be Soymich on Reb David Baran in a situation of a Shasat Chag. The person writes after, and this I also verified, the person writes after that when he left Reb Shlomo Zalman, he realized that Reb David Baran is not alive anymore. And he wasn't sure who still does this mahalach that Reb David Baran does, who's still taking off Trumas and Maisers. So he went to Reb Shmuel Orbach and Rabbi Rosenthal, who is Rav Shari Chesed, and they told him that it's very mistaver that Reb Shlomo Zalman himself goes every Erev Shabbos and takes off Trumas and Maisers this way. Rabbi said, this is a fascinating story. You have a Pesach who disagrees with another Pesach, strongly wrote a kuntres against it, tells people to be Seimech on Ibashas and Chag, and he himself goes and does that Mahalach. Because he understands that there are Pesachim, Eilu Veilu Divar L'Kim Chayim, in most cases both are Emes, and therefore even the Machmer relies on the Mekel in certain cases. So we're going to hear a fascinating show from a bunch of Choshev Rabbanim on how they were Makabah from their Rabbeim, different things that they saw, and how to come to Pesach. Everyone, let's go to our show.
We have the schuss to have on the show Rav Moshe Kaufman, who is a very, very popular Maggid Shir for the Chicago Community Kollel. He's also the founding member of the Midwest Beis Haram, and he's the general editor of the Feinstein Foundation, which edits the Dibros Moshes and the Maseiros Moshes. He also does business halacha contracts, where if anybody wants to make sure their businesses are compliant with halacha, they can reach out to him. Shalom Aleichem, Rav Moshe Kaufman.
Shalom, Rav Kaufman. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, so we're discussing a topic of Poiskim, of what goes on the behind the scenes when Poiskim would give a psak. And especially you, who have been editing and writing the Maseiros Moshe, which is more than just Psakim. It shows how Rav Moshe thought and how Rav Moshe decided to come Psakim. What do you want to share with the Olam of what goes on behind the scenes when a Rav gives a psak?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very important shaila. Sometimes it's difficult for people to get their hands around understanding exactly why different Poiskim pask in different ways and how people are weighing it. The first thing that we have to know is that there's an inherent stira, there's a contradiction between what the halacha, how the halachic process works, and the fact that people always want like an instantaneous psak. One of the rabbanim from the Beis Hayra once got a text at 8:30 in the morning about some fertility shaila that would make the child that he was having question whether it was a yid or not. And he's texting it in 10 words, hoping to get a one-word response to, you know, calm him down when it's such a serious, severe shaila that's very complex. So we want to have that instantaneous answer, but at the same time, you know, have the right answer. And the halacha is very complex. Every person, every rav, every responsible paisik that's going to go through the sugya, with the rishonim, the achronim, the paiskim, to know, to weigh everything, you have to go through it. It has to be done in a thought out process. After you have all the ideas of all the relevant sugyas, now you can start to handle the shaila. A person called me a few days ago about porch minyanim. He was screaming. He looked all over Hilchos Tefillah, and he didn't find that you could be mistarif from two different porches. So I said, maybe look in Hilchos Zimun. I think Hilchos Zimun, maybe it talks about it. And you know, people not knowing, not having that. But if a person who's a poskim, who's a bar hachi, will have all those ideas. And now you could go through it. There's lechatchilas, there's bedieved, there's svaras of gedolei achronim that we might use in a shas hadchak. And once you, but it's only after you have those ideas, and then you go through it and figure out what's the situation. You know, a shaila that everyone's very busy with, and this tkufa is tefilas kalim. Now, tefilas kalim, it's very difficult. I saw a certain rav paskin that you could rely on hefker, even though he himself other times said you can never rely on hefker. Afilu b'shas atzak. So then, must be that he decided that there's shas atzak, and then there's shas atzak. Now, where he lives, there's no lake. In Chicago, there's a lake a mile away. So you have to read down the shaila. Should I rely on Hefker when I could just go to the lake? So that's a whole different shaila than if a person lives in a place in which there are no goyim or a place where there's no water at all. So people have to understand those subtleties. And those subtleties only come with understanding the sugya in a very deep way. Rav Moshe himself, a lot of times, was very unclear. There were questions that he left unresolved and didn't even mention them. Just to give you an example, something that's going to be at least in part in Maseiros Moshe Chelek Dalet, Amir Tzashem. There's a story where Moshe has a psak in Aruch Chaim Chelek Aleph, where he talks about lowering the gas on Yom Tov, to lower it rather than start a new fire. And he says over the halacha that, and he paskins that it's mutter to do. There was a person in MPJ that felt that he took the liberty to educate the Olam, and he put into the Igros Moshe of MPJ, he put in the words, Deloy Kimogen Avram Freshes in Simon Tov Kuf Yudalud. This is not like the Mogen Avram. So, Feshteitza, some of the Talmidim saw this in the Igros Moshe, and they showed it to Rav Moshe. So, Rav Moshe right away said, he has a Shaila from a Mogen Avram. What, he thinks I forgot a Mogen Avram? Call him into the office. I'm going to explain it to him. And Rav Moshe called him in, and very calmly, Rav Moshe said, you know, if you have a Shaila, you could just explain it to, you know, just tell me you have a shaila and I'll explain it to you. And he explains to him why the Magen Avraham, that can't be what the Magen Avraham means, because you can't learn up the rush like that. And I'll tell him, this is what the Magen Avraham means, and really it's mutter. And then eventually, Ramesha wrote a tshuva to explain it, because he said if this person made a mistake, so then other people might make the same mistakes. And he wrote a letter, and that tshuva was printed in Igris in Arachayim Chelik Dalit. But what happened was that this person had a kasha from Magen Avraham, and Ramesha didn't, for whatever reason, didn't bother writing in the first tshuva, you know, why it's not shver with the Magen Avraham. For whatever reason, it could be there was time constraints, it could be the person he was writing to, you know, he wasn't holding in that sugya right now, so Ramesha didn't feel that he should give him the whole sugya mitzvah about his life, for whatever it is. But a person should understand that, you know, a person should automatically say, oh, they made a mistake. The Gedalia Paiskim of the Friedrich Gedalias and Unz generation also, we have many, many Gedalia Tamidah Chachamim, yeah, they don't just forget things. That doesn't work like that. They have reasons why in the Shikol Hadas, and those things are always balanced. Is it a Shasat Chak? Is it a B'diyevid? And that's like the Aleph Beis in understanding how Pesukim work. You know, in the back room of Pesukim, it's really understanding the sugya.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Very interesting. Could you share with us a few pesukim from your rabbeim, either pesukim that you saw written for Ramesha Feinstein that you feel that, okay, there was a special situation why Ramesha passing like that, or when people ask, oh, there's a contradiction to this story, to this tshuva from this pesuk, that it's really not a contradiction, that there was a special thought process that went into why it was answered like this, and to this specific community, this specific person. Could you share a few examples?
Right, that's something that comes up all the time, where people will ask a stira, either they'll ask a stira in the Igros Moshe itself, and how to work out different contradictions, and there's more than a few, and not contradictions in the Lamdas, but contradictions in what Ramesh is telling people to do. And in general, Dovid Feinstein told me a klal once, that in places where Ramesh is marich, as opposed to places where Ramesh is makatzer, so those things we should give more weight. Those things we should give more weight to. Or it depends who Ramesh is writing to. If Ramesh is writing to an Adam Gadol, so then that has more weight than necessarily if he's writing to someone who he's trying to keep it simple. And I did see in the notes of the Masoreis Maaseiah where sometimes Ramesh would actually look back to the tshuva to see who he wrote it to understand exactly, you know, this person, I see from the titles that I was just trying to keep it simple for him, not to make it too complex. So there are people that ask a lot of stiras in the Igros Moshe itself. That's number one. And number two, people ask stiras between what we call a public psak and a private psak. This could be from a tshuva. This could be from a shir that a rav says publicly, as opposed to a psak that he gets privately. I remember once I was supposed to give a shir in Hilchos Zichur that was advertised in Chicago, and Rabbi First called me the night before to say that I shouldn't emphasize so much the heter of the Chazon Ish about Baila Be'ir. That the Chazon Ish holds that even if there's no chance that the husband will come home, he's in a jail cell, but the jail cell is a few blocks away, but there's no chance that he could show up at any time. Still, there's a psychological fear that the wife has in being caught, and that's what prevents her from even considering to do anything inappropriate. And Rabbi First said that I shouldn't emphasize it so much. Because first of all, Rabbi Moshe argues on that very strongly. And second of all, you know, we don't find in the Metzias is that they have a psychological fear. So the Chazon Ish is the Chazon Ish. But still, you know, you have to weigh things properly to know whether you could tell that to the Hamoinam, whether that's a kula that they should be exercising. So that would be a classic example. And a lot of times, and there's no real stiras. No real stiras. It's just weighing everything properly. I'll give you an example. First of all, we see a lot of things that the Rabbanim might do themselves as a Chumrah, sometimes a Kula, but usually it's a Chumrah, and we shouldn't get overwhelmed by that, because that's what they're doing for their own Hanog, but they're not telling other people to do that. The most classic example is Ramesha, when he came to MTJ, and all the years, at least for, you know, many, many, many years, the yeshiva davened at 9 o'clock on Shabbos morning. On Shabbos morning, they were davened at 9 o'clock. Now, we think that sounds like, you know, a little wild. So there was a Rav here in Chicago, Rav Michal Small, the nephew of Ramesha. So he told me that the reason why 9 o'clock minyanim were shtel davek is because who would daven early Shabbos morning? The people, the Rahman al-Islam, were going to work. So they would daven hashkama, and they would get on a train. By 9 o'clock, they were on a train. So they shtel davek late minyanim to guarantee that the only people that would come to those minyanim would be Shomrei Shabbos. Because if you start davening at 9 o'clock, it's going to kill your whole workday. So he said, people think the Hashkama is the Tzidkis, and the lightning is the opposite. He said, it's mamish not like that. He's like, the late minion was shtel levek to guarantee that there will be only Shomer Shabbos. But lemaisa, if a person starts davening at 9 o'clock many times, he's going to miss Zman Kriya Shema entirely. So he has to daven Kriya Shema early. So Rav Moshe, for himself, he davened at home. On those Shabbos, and that they were going to miss Zman Kriya Shema entirely, even the Grozman, Rav Moshe would daven at home the whole Shacharis. And then he would go to Yeshiva, and he would talk of Prav as if he was davening Shacharis, but he lemaisa davened Shacharis in his house in order to make the Zman properly. Now, that's not something, he didn't advocate even the Yeshiva should change the Zman. And he didn't tell people that they should do this even privately. He did it for himself. So seeing the Rav's own Hanhaga, that a person, you know, there's things that he passed for the Hamoinam, and there's things that he does for himself. The Stifler famously said that he would do a lot more humorous. The problem is people are watching him. So then they're going to learn from him. And there's a lot of things. Rav Moshe, if someone ever asked him, you know, the Mishnah Berurah says, you shouldn't daven Mincha and Ma'ariv in the same Zman on Friday night, which means if you daven Mincha after Plag, then you're going to want to daven Ma'ariv also after Plag, so it's going to be a Tati Disasri. So if anyone asked Rav Moshe about the Tati, Rav Moshe himself defended the Tati Disasri, and he said it's based on the Rush, and he was very stark about it. But if you asked him privately, then Rav Moshe would tell you, you should avoid the Shaila. If you're asking me, then you should avoid the Shaila. And by davening early Mincha. But in general, he was very, you know, for someone who came just to Lakanter, that, oh, Yenim people are doing wrong, you know, he defended it very stark. So you're always going to have things in which, you know, the Hamayit, if there's the Minigah Olam, and then you have what's a private Hanhaga, or you have something that's a Chumrah, that's Kedai to do. I know that Rav Moshe talks about Yichud by doctors in the Tshuva, so you have to read the Tshuva carefully. He says that Zeizogin, that Yichud is Mutter because the doctor is Isaac b'malachtai. But Lamaisa, in private, he was very, very discouraging of people getting involved in Yichud Shiloh with doctors. And it could be history, you know, proves Rav Moshe correct in being very careful, you know, in telling people to be careful. But in the Tshuva, you know, he doesn't come out against it. He doesn't come out against it. But these are things that, when you think about it, it's not a stira at all. He's saying that the Minhag HaOlam is to rely on this heter. But if you asked him privately, he would tell you, you know, zikr, a person should be zahir. So we spoke about yichud and davening and other hanhagas, so that, you know, these things are just very, very classic things. A lot of times if a big tzaddik would come to Rav Moshe, you know, like a person with an overwhelming amount of Yerushalayim, Rav Moshe would always tell him Lahashmir, because that's what the person needed to hear. The person needs to hear.
Let me ask you a very interesting question. One of the things that changed from the modern day that we live now in 2020 to 50, even less, 50, 40 years ago, is technology. What does that mean? It used to be you had to ask a shiloh to a rav, so you had to go to the rav's house. The rav saw you, said hello to you, maybe sized you up a little bit, like you just said, overwhelming your shemaim or not. Then things changed, evolved, people started calling on the phone. Okay, you could still speak to someone for a couple of minutes to try your best to size the person up. Of course, you don't know, you know. But now people are texting and emailing shilohs. Explain, is there a difficulty? Is there a difference now that certain times Rabbanim don't know who's asking the shiloh? Or, you know, explain what goes on, depends on who's asking the question. How does the Rav make a decision?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course. This is a tremendous problem. It's a tremendous, tremendous problem. And it's a problem for many, many Rabbanim. It's a problem in the sense that they feel compelled to always be machber, because they don't know who they're talking to. And it's really a chaval. And Rav Moshe speaks about this in a few tshuvas, that why he was against, you know, making a kisser piskei igris Moshe type of sefer, because you can't just take a psak that was designed for one person and apply it to your situation. Every psak is meant for that individual person. Now, if I know the person and I know that I'm able to, that they have a shakat psak situation, they have some type of situation in which they can't do the lechatchila, so then I could tell them, you know, I can instruct them to do things in a certain way. Also, I could, you know that what they're going to do with it. Are they going to abuse it? Are they going to be posting it somewhere that, oh, my rabbi said that this is mutter? And it's a big problem. So really, as anyone who's done Shimush by Talmid HaChamim know, that you always have to paskin for the person that's asking the Shaila. Right? You can't paskin just from the Svarim and say, well, I know everything already because I know all the Svarim. You have to take all the Torah knowledge and apply it to the situation. Dayan First constantly says, you have to know Mivan Mivahochim. You have to know who we're talking about. You have to know who we're dealing with. And when we ask him different shilas, he says, it depends who's asking. It depends who's asking the shilas. Now, if a person doesn't know, so then you're in a difficult spot, and different rabbanim will, you know, act differently in different situations. Some people will just, you know, give their standardized approach. So you're getting a cookie-cutter approach when you could have a tailor-made approach. And I've dealt with many shilas where people email in shilas to other people, and, you know, without speaking to them on the phone, and they get upset it's very painful for them to deal with that psak, and then someone convinces them, okay, why don't you pick up a phone and call someone, and then after speaking to them, you could get a clarity as to what they could do, what modifications can be done in order to you know, allow you know, make the halacha, make sure that the halacha is being kept properly, 100%, because sometimes people will give chumras and the people are not going to hold by you. They're just not going to hold by you, but they don't know who they're talking to. So it's, the one thing is that every person should have a rav. It's very important for every person to have a rav. Person has a rav, they take a big load off of their shoulders because they can speak to someone who understands their needs, who understands, not, I don't mean needs like they just need to be mako. It's like they understand which areas of halacha are difficult for them and which are not. And there are times where a person, a beis hara is sometimes hurtful in that way because you're calling a random rav and you're anonymous. Then it doesn't work. You have to make sure that it's someone who's familiar with you, who understands what's going on. If it's a, and it can even be a simple kasher shaila, but your lachas in your life might require a rav to be more, you know, try to come up with a heter, try to come up with a solution. I'm all, it's awesome. It happens like that. But it's very important that a person should have a kesher to a rav. You're right, because of technology, we feel like we have access to all the information. But the information is very, very unclear. It's very unclear, and there's two parts to that. The information is, number one, it could be it was tailor-made for that person, lakula or lachumra, and you don't really know. Number two, you don't know at all if the what was said. What was the psak? The psak was that it's mutter. Just to give an example, wearing masks in areas that don't have an eruv, or rishus harabim d'oraisa. So could a person wear a mask on Shabbos? So, okay, this Paisik said that it's mutter. Okay, so one second here. I got three different shilas in 3 days. One, the first person asks, can I wear a mask to protect myself? That's one shila. The second shila is, can I wear a mask? I don't care to wear a mask. I just don't want to make anyone else sick. So I'm wearing it to protect somebody else. And the third shila was, I'm not worried about getting people sick, and I'm not worried about getting sick, but if people see a certain type of Orthodox Jew not wearing a mask, they're going to think horrible things. So could I wear it in Rosh Hashanah for a social reason? So now those are three different shilas. So just to say, oh, I heard that Pesach said that you could wear a mask. Well, it depends what he said. It depends what the shilah was. It depends, you know, what the lumdus was in getting that, in saying yes. And of course, it's going to depend on the shilah and the answer. So just to use technology. Technology is good just to get familiar with the concepts. But to use the psukim.
So, Ramoji, you're saying the most important thing, especially nowadays, where so many people are asking shilas, and so much, it's so easy to access Rabbanim and to get through to people. You're saying a person has to be very, very, very careful that they have their own personal rav that knows them, that understands them, that's able to hear the question specifically for them, and then with a shikul hadash, decide what halacha would answer such a person. That's the most important thing that a person
100%. And if a person, I would add that if a person doesn't do that, then they end up losing out because in most situations, a responsible rav is not going to give a kula to someone who he doesn't really know because he doesn't know is the person going to abuse the kula. And we've had many situations where people just didn't understand what the rav said because they couldn't follow up with the rav. So many responsible ravanim will not give those kulas. So the person loses out because it could be that there's a kula in the sugya that will be relevant to their shaila. But the rav's going to be hesitant to give it to them because he doesn't know who they are. We've gotten many phone calls from people on the East Coast, And we asked them, I mean, there are Rabbanim on the East Coast. Why are you calling? So he says, no, my Rav said I should call the Midwest because no one on the East Coast is going to deal with the Shaila. So I pass them on. I pass them on to Rabbi first. I won't either deal with that Shaila once I hear that. But the idea is that they're going to be nervous. That obviously the Rabbanim would be nervous because who are they talking to? And they end up losing out. So if a person wants to have, you know, Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba, so then the first thing he would do is to make sure that they have shaykh to a rav. And if a person, if there's a woman that needs to have a rav, then she should be calling one specific rav and make sure that, you know, that her husband and herself, that they're communicating with a rav who knows them and understands them. And Takit will be very good. There's one other point about like one word sukkim is that we don't, it happens many, many times. And this I saw also, this is like the Rav Moshe that we don't really know, is Rav Moshe's frustration in people misconstruing what he said. And he said people who could know better and could, you know, they just didn't pay attention enough and they said over what Rav Moshe said in the totally opposite way than what he intended, which could happen, especially if a person's dealing with one word short psukim. And in this environment that we have today with technology, psukim get shorter and shorter and shorter. People don't have time to read through a whole thing. And people will ask you questions and they want a one word answer. And that one word answer could end up getting very misconstrued. There was the relative of Rav Moshe who lived out of the New York area. And when he would come visit Rav Moshe from time to time, Rav Moshe said to him, "It's like, I love when you come visit, because every time you come, I hear a new psak from Rav Moshe." You know, like that idea of hearing something that, like, you have to figure out what he did say and how the game of broken telephones happened. But here, it just happens. Like, there's something that people go around saying that there's no Bishul Akum by factories. So, you know, but when you look into it, you look in Masaris Moshe Chelek Beis and Rivvei Sefrayim, he brings a letter that Rav Nutza Greenblatt wrote, and it says over there that Rav Moshe looked over the letter. And there Rav Moshe was talking about very specific types of cooking practice that you can't repeat at home. So he's saying if a factory has a very unique style and how they're able to cook the food, that it could be that's not included in the Isurim of Bishul Akum, Ayin Shum. But just to say in a general sense that no Bishul Akum by factories, that's like the oversimplifying of what Rav Moshe said could end up leading to a big mistake. There's a story, two brothers that were in Yud Beis Chodesh for their father. So they had a shaila about going to a certain chasana. So they both asked the same rav, and they got two different sukkot. Now, how could that happen? The first one came to the rav and said, you know, should I go to the chasana? And the rav said, better not to. And the second one went to the rav and said, should I stay home from the chasana? And the rav said, it's better not to. So without really putting everything together, so that ended up with two different things, you know, based on Arada. It's based on the Shaila. It's based on the Shaila. And it's based on, you know, really understanding. So a person should much of the Rav. You know, not that the Rav gets paid too much, he says, but, you know, make him earn his money. I don't think any Rav is ever bothered by someone who really wants to understand what the Rav is paskening. Not the Lumdis, because unless you're willing to sit down and go through the whole sugya, but just to understand clearly, let me make sure I understood what the Rav is telling me to do. Right? Don't worry about that. Don't worry about, you know, bothering the Rav. The Rav is very happy to be bothered, to be madrich everyone in Al Derech HaEmes. You never have to worry about that. And if a person will taka do that, then he'll be zeicha to go in the Derech Hashem in the best possible way.
Thank you so much, Rav Moshe. Thank you so much for educating the Olam, especially with the experiences you have with answering shaylos both in business halacha and leading the Beis Sera in Chicago. Thank you so much, Rav Moshe Kaufman, for being on the show.
Okay.
We have the schus to have on the show Reb Arya Leibowitz. Reb Arya Leibowitz is a Rebbe in Yeshiva Rabbeinu Yitzchak Elkanan and the Rav of Beis HaKnesses of North Woodmere. Shalom Aleichem, Rabbi Leibowitz.
Aleichem Shalom. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay. We are doing an interview with Rabbanim of Gift Psakim, who help and Madrich the Tzibur and how to act when they have halachic shaylos. And we're trying to get a sense of what goes on behind the scenes when a Rav issues a psak, when are both Lekula and Lechumra, to who they're asking to. From your experience, what's something that you want to share with our listeners?
This is a very, very big topic. I would first say, just al derech hakdama, that by way of introduction, that Rabbi Menachem Penner once told me that he was talking to Rabbi Yitzchak Berkovitz, and Rabbi Berkovitz said that he's able to explain how psak halacha works, specifically because he does not view himself as a great posek. I mean, he gave a mashal. He used to be a manager in Major League Baseball, Billy Martin. And as a baseball player, he was a terrible, terrible player. But he was an excellent manager. And someone asked him, like, how do you tell other people how to play the game if you weren't even such a good player yourself? And he said, look, if you had Joe DiMaggio trying to explain to someone how to hit, it would never work because it just came so naturally to him. What do you mean how to hit? You hit the baseball. He said, but I had to work so hard just to get to where I got. I had to think about how all of this works. So I'm able to explain it a lot better. So Rav Berkovitz, who happens to be a great postic in his own right, but he was humbly suggesting that he was able to explain psak because he isn't one of the great poskim. That sometimes a person has a certain chush for psak that can't even be explained by the person himself. So that's my akdama, because I feel like it's a little bit almost inappropriate to talk about psak halacha with someone at my level of the rabbanim. I'm a small community rav, and we deal with halachic issues, but there are real poskim that deal with the major issues of psak halacha. But maybe on some level they're less capable of explaining how they go about doing it than those who observe them are able to see. That's the hakdama. But as far as like what goes on behind the psak, I mean there's. Maybe let's start with what doesn't go. I mean, what doesn't go into the making of a posek? I think what you find across the board, from whichever community, Sephardi, Ashkenazi, Hasidish, Litvish, whatever community you come from, the great and most respected poskim are usually not people who spend an inordinate amount of time in one particular area, or a disproportionate amount of time in one particular area of halacha. They don't even become the great poskim in that particular area. To be a great posek, a person has to have this incredible broad, to really have been through shas and have an understanding of kala tarakula that goes into developing this like sixth sense for psak and for the way the Torah thinks and the way the Torah views things and how to measure what's a shas hachak and to understand the mechanism of sex feika and all of these things are developed and honed by really seeing it in practice through kala Torah kula. So that's like almost one of the most I remember Mori Virabi Rav Hershel Schechter told us that when he was studying for smicha, when he was learning, trying to learn Yerideya, so what he would do to test himself is he would go through a shaila that was sent to Rav Moshe Feinstein, and then he wouldn't read Rav Moshe's tshuva, and he would write his own tshuva, and then he would compare his tshuva to Rav Moshe's tshuva to see if he got it right. And he said that invariably, he was point for point. He got the basics, the basic, what the shach has to say and how to apply that shach and how to apply that pischi tshuva and how to. And then at a left field, Rav Moshe would bring in a sugyon b'chayrus or, something that he said, I even knew the Gemara, but I never would have thought to apply it, to have like that level of mastery over everything. That's where the big poskim are made. And I think it's just very important, just that, at my level and at the communal level, that Rabbanim have to remember what God looks like and to have that humility to be kafuf to big poskim.
Yeah, I remember, I just based on what you're saying, I remember when I did my smicha by Rav Vosner, so we went to Bnei Brak, and Rav Vosner told us something very interesting. He said he was one time by the Chazon Ish when Avram Chaim Noah sent a letter to the Chazon Ish, basically that the Chazon Ish argued with one of his psakim on Shirim. And Avram Chaim Noah wrote to the Chazon Ish, this is my topic, this is my thing. like that kilu the chazanish should be machniya to his tzad. Ram Chayinah, besides being a baki in kol Torah kulu, but he was an extra baki in Hilcha Shiurim. And the Chazanish told his Talmidim after he read the letter who were around him, he says, you have to tell Ram Chayinah that in Halacha there's no nose doctor, which basically there's no kashuba being baki in one sugya. You need kol Torah kulu to be able to guide you in all psakim.
And sometimes I would even say it's a detriment. You know, so, I mean, I'm all for, and everyone is all for people learning a particular topic very, very well. But sometimes when a person focuses like his entire life's work on, you know, like you have Svarim nowadays, you could have a good friend of mine who hosts a show sometimes, Rabbi Ari Wasserman, published two big fat volumes on yarmulkes. Right, so I, you know how much time he must have spent on yarmulkes. So I think dafka sometimes, not saying this about Rabbi Wasserman, but I'm saying sometimes when a person puts so much kochos into one mikzoa, that it takes on more importance in their mind when psak very often involves balancing against other considerations. But if you just spent 10 years studying that topic, you may have like an oversized chashivus in a person's mind. You know, it's a mum for behema if it has one leg that's longer than the other. Meaning, things have to be proportionate. You know, I think that's what, if I'm not mistaken, Rav Nissen Alper in his Hesped for Rav Moshe said that part of being a gadol is that everything's proportional, that everything makes sense. You know, it fits seamlessly in the overall personality. That there's not one thing that jumps out above everything else. I think that's true on the psak level as well. And also, just a lot of times people could even be big bikiim, but there's a sixth sense for psak that you know, sometimes people are meant to be great lamdanim or great bikiim. But I wouldn't necessarily go to them with a psak halach. Either they don't have a mesorah, or they don't understand people, or they don't understand mitzius, or they just lack a chush or the confidence for psak. And sometimes that's how you end up with outlandish chumras. Because if you know a lot of things...
Let me interrupt and ask a pointed question, two questions. I'll start with one. What you just mentioned with the importance of going to a place who has a mesorah, There's a common mistake that people make, that they have a shiloh, they open up a kitzur sefer, maybe they even Google the shiloh, they see what the different places can say, and then they say, okay, you know, this place accepts this place, this is how I'm going to be noyig. Do you think that that's a right approach? Do you think it's a wrong approach? Could you explain to the listeners the importance of having a rebbe and having a mesorah, and not just opening up a sefer that says, you know, this is how you should be noyig?
The kitzur sefarim are a very fascinating phenomenon. Kitzur Sfarim definitely have value. I remember talking to Mariv Rabbi Rav Asher Weiss, and he was explaining to us what he views as the value of the Kitzur Sefer. Not really Kitzur Sefer, I would say like one of these, like a Sefer that takes a topic and is like an encyclopedia, but on that topic, and which is a very popular thing nowadays, but it wasn't always. And he said, like, I wouldn't trust such a Sefer for Psak, but for Mar Makomos, it's fantastic. Now, a Kitzur Sefer is a little bit different. A Kitzur Sefer really just gives you the bottom line. But that's been going on for centuries already. So it's very interesting when you look through the poskim how they view Kitzur Svarim. You know, the Rambam was a Kitzur Sefer. The Tur says, Ein Ritzoni Laharich Barayos. I just want to bring Divrei HaPoskim, meaning I'm not going to give you the whole Iyun. I'm just going to give you the Psak Halacha. The Ramah in his Hakdamat Darkei Moshe says the same thing, that he's not interested in the Ta'amim and the reasons for the mitzvahs and the lundas. He's just going to give you the Psak Halacha. So there is basis for that, but there's an equally strong, if not stronger, tradition of Rishonim and Achronim screaming about how that's not a way to learn, meaning that's a good way to chazer, it's a good way to make sure you didn't miss anything, but that's not a way to learn, that's certainly not a way to paskin. There's a Tshuva Sarash who says that someone had asked the Rosh, a Shaila, where the person assumed a certain understanding of a sugya based on a Rambam. And he says, you know, the world makes a mistake by paskening based on the Rambam without knowing the sugya, without knowing where the Rambam got it from and understanding how the Rambam went from the Gemara to his Pshak Halacha. And the Rush says, and I see it happen all the time, that people are Oser as a Mutter and Matir as a Oser based on that. They get Pshak Halacha wrong. It's a beautiful Ksav Sofer. Ksav Sofer has in the Tshuva, you know, the Gemara says in Brachos that Ein L'Kodesh Baruch Hu Ela Dalet Amos Shel Halacha Bilvad. So why is Halacha referred to as Dalet Amos? Right, hello, any number of amos, I don't know, that's so pashas is that the size of a rishus of a person, but says the Ksav Sofer specifically four, because a person when it comes to halacha has to first do mikra, then mishnah, then gemara, then halacha, and if you just jump straight to halacha, you're not going to get it right. So it is very, a lot of people don't even know, a lot of yeshiva bachur don't even know that the Gemara is a halacha sefer, or that the Chumash is a halacha sefer. Now, obviously, there's a lot more than just halacha in Gemara and certainly in Chumash, but a lot of people, they think the halacha started with the Mishnah Brura, because that's their halacha sefer, and Gemara is all about lam. But that's obviously not the case. For a person to really paskin a halacha properly, he has to learn through the sugya. I think Rav Vazna writes about the Chazanish. I think Rav Vazna has a tshuva, and Rav Vadi also writes this way, that the Chazanish, when he was a bachur, they used to make fun of him, that he would sit there learning through the sugyas of Tor, Beis Yosef, and Shulchan Aruch. He would follow it through. And they made fun of him that he's never going to be a lan. So I think Rav Vazna writes in the tshuva in Shevin Alevi, that's why everyone else became everyone else, and the Chazanish became the Chazanish, because he understood how to learn the halacha properly.
An interesting question that I would want to bring up. It's a little bit of a complicated question, but you hear the words that certain places are known as mekilim, certain places are known as machmirim. Of course, when we're referring to gedolei paiskim as mekilim, we mean that they're golems. We don't mean that they're cow people, they're light people, and they don't take things so seriously. But sometimes people by mistake make that mistake. They think those who are mekil, you know, just are more like they're more, let's call it chill, they're more easygoing, and those who are machmir are more tough and stringent. Could you share some wisdom on the concept of someone being mekil, someone being machmir? What goes through someone's head when he decides to be mekil? And it's of course not just, you know, deciding, yeah, okay, I'm an easygoing person.
Okay, so a couple of things on this. Sometimes a person gets a reputation as a mekil or a machmir for a particular psak, meaning if there's a psak that the person gave that became very popular or that became very publicized, and it happened to have been a kula, but overall they're not always mekil, they get an unfair reputation as a mekel. And the Gemara says that they were very wary of this. They didn't want to be known as a Beis Din that was matir things, because that's not a good reputation to have. You don't want to have a reputation that you take things with a kalus, with a lightheadedness. But the Gemara also tells us that sometimes when a person is mekel, when a posik is mekel, that's not an indication of kalus, adarabah, that's an indication of godless, because it's very easy to be machmir in something. Anyone could be machmir if you're not sure. You play it safe and you machmir. The Gemara has an expression, mi ika hora'a le'isir. You never have hora'a, which is a description of a serious psak that requires real confidence and knowledge. You don't have that terminology when you're describing an isser, because anyone could say asser. Hora'a is when you're describing something that's a heter, because it takes a lot more to be mekel than it does to be machmir. And then a final thing on this issue of being a mekel and being a machmir, genuine gedolei poskim are not striving for either one of those things. It's not even in the cheshbon in terms of are people going to think of me as a mekel or a machmir. Genuine gedolei poskim are able to remove themselves from the situation and just look for ratzon Hashem and the dvar Hashem. What does Ribbono Shel Olam say? What does Ribbono Shel Olam want? With no regard for what that's going to do for the Rabbi. You know, people criticize Rav Moshe. I think, I'll leave out who, but people criticize Rav Moshe and said, how could it be the very first tshuva in all of the Gris Moshe is that you're allowed to wear a small yarmulke, is that you don't need to have a big yarmulke. That's got to be your first tshuva in all of the Gris Moshe. You know, the first tshuva should be some knockout tshuva with, and Rav Moshe had, you know, should be one of those with like 15 anafim where, you know, that he wrote to Rav David Shlita or something like that. The first tshuva is that you can wear a small yarmulke. And the answer is, Rav Shachter explained to us, that Rav Moshe didn't think of it as any different than any other tshuva. It's the Dvar Hashem. So that's his interpretation of Rav Shlomo Kluger and the Taz and how to understand the whole machlokas. That's how we arrived at that conclusion, by a genuine interest in Dvar Hashem, not looking for a kula, not looking for a chumra. So that's what a real posek does. It happens to be, you know, everyone thinks of things differently. So some people will end up l'kula, and some people will end up l'chumra on certain issues. But really, the path, the correct path, that certainly I've observed among gedolei poskim that I've been privileged to see, is to just, you know, down the middle, with certain exceptions. Obviously, there are certain exceptions where you're a little more no to lahakel, and you have not, I wouldn't say an agenda, but a little bit more of an agenda, a little bit more of an idea to be makel. But for the most part, the Gedolei HaPoskim can really try to just figure out what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants.
Very interesting, very interesting. What would you say that nowadays, and I think this is a very important question for the listeners, nowadays that we have technology and people could communicate in ways they never communicated before, either through text message or through emails. Forget about going actually face to face to speak to a Rav. The max somebody would do is pick up the phone and call. Do you think that there could be mistakes that could happen when a Rav doesn't know who's asking the question, who they are, where the question's coming in a text message? Or do you think, no, psak, and it doesn't make a difference how it's being addressed?
I've seen it. I mean, mistakes definitely creep in when you don't know who you're talking to. I'll just give a very simple example. When a local community rav always has to paskin hilchos nidashaylos, they come up all the time. So I can have two people that will ask me the same words. They'll use the same wording for their question, and it will be two totally different answers. And the reason is just very simply, if I know that one of the people, let's say, suffers from terrible OCD, and it expresses it, which is very common, and it expresses itself in this area of halacha, and I've seen it, I've seen how it expresses itself in this area of halacha, so I know how to touch up the words a little bit differently. When they're saying they're mesupuk, they're not sure, maybe they saw something, that's very different than someone who doesn't suffer from that same problem saying they're mesupuk, they're not sure, maybe they saw something. So it's very important to have a sense of who the people are, and sometimes it's very important to know what level of dedication to Torah and mitzvot the people have, and what they're ready to be mekabel, what they're ready. You know, the Gemara has an expression, "Kedai hu Rabbi Shimon l'smuch lav b'shas adchak," which means that there's such a thing as a shas adchak, and sometimes we'll even follow a shita that we normally wouldn't follow if the situation calls for it. But you're only going to know to do that if you know the situation, if you're familiar with the situation. So I think it's very important to have clarity in who the people are. You're not just passing shilas, you're passing for people.
Very interesting, very interesting.
One more thing. You also have to take into account how the person will hear it. Meaning, if you're giving, is the person going to be medama milsa la milsa? Will you say something that's going to make the religion look like a joke? You know, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins in Yerodeh and Reish Membeis, that you're not allowed to paskin the davar tamua l'rabin. That even if it's correct, but everyone's going to say that people are going to take it in a way that that's a joke. How can you, you know, to someone who doesn't have a brain that's attuned to the workings of halacha, it will sound silly. So you have to be cognizant of that as well.
Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you very much for the show and sharing on Haggah that you were mekabel from your Rabbeim. Kol Tov, all the best.
My pleasure. Take care.
We have the schus to have on the show Harav HaGaon Reb Shmuel Wiener, who is the Rav of the American Yungalai to move to Eretz Yisrael, the Rav of a Beis Medrash called Zichron Nosson Tzvi. He's also the Paisik in Yeshivas Teres Moshe, also in Rabbi Center's Yeshiva. And he also started a major project in Eretz Yisrael, which is a kashrus called ZNT Kashrus, which is for the Americans to have a kashrus for the American standards. Welcome, Rabbi Wiener, to the show.
Thank you.
Okay, Rabbi Wiener, we're discussing a very interesting topic. We're discussing the topic of how do poskim issue a psak, which means, you know, from a layman's point of view, they think that a poskim just opens up, you know, either Shulchan Aruch or a Mishnah Berurah or a Kitzur Sefer sees what the Gedolei Paisim say in issue of Psak, we're trying to see what goes on behind the scenes. What cheshbonis does a Paisik take before he answers a question? If you could share something, your thought process for the listeners.
Okay. So one very important role that the Rav has to play is to put himself into the shoes of the Shoyel. You have whether it's a Bachar, a married Digaman, his wife, the couple who's asking the Shaila, the Rav has to be able to understand what his background situation and the Shaila that he's, and where he's coming from. And the reason why this is very important is because when paskening a Shaila, so many times when going through the sugya and going through the inyan of the halacha, one realizes that there's many times in a time of hefsid, so there may be leniency to rely on other shittas or hefsid meruba. In halacha, we find many times when it's Erev Shabbos, there could be leniencies in certain halachas. Shasat Chak, B'dieved, when it was done already. So if the Rav understands the Shoyel, and that's why it's important for a Shoyel to have a Rav that he knows personally, a Rav that the Rav knows him. So many times the Rav can understand that because of what they're going through or the situation that they're in, in such a case, this is a shasat chak. This is a bidyevet. This is a alachat chila. That's what the rav is going through. That's the rav. That's the process that the rav is going through in his mind. I also feel very strongly that when we're talking about sometimes what bothers people is that why. Sometimes the Rav is a little more mekel, a little more machmer, or this Rav is a mekel, this Rav is a machmer. It's not so much chumrah kulis. True, there are certain natures that certain people have the nature of being more machmer, and some people have the nature of being more mekel. But many times that's not what's happening, that he's a machmer, he's a mekel. Many times it's the clearer the sugya is to the Rav sees within the halachas how we could, how it could be done in an hesedic way. Many times in Hilchos Shabbos, a very standard example is, let's say, Beira. There's a hesed way to do Beira. If you take the oichel from the psalis for immediate use, with a kli. So someone can ask a shayla. The Rav could say, it's usher. Or the Rav could respond and say, you know what? This way is also, but I'll tell you how to do it in a hesedic way. So many, many times that's what the Rav is looking for, a way that it's done l'chatchila beheter. And the clearer the Rav has the sugya with the intricacies of the sugya, he could figure out many times how it could be done. It may not be as convenient or come out the same way as the shayla would like it to be, but that's what the Rav is doing when he's answering a shayla. He's trying to help the shayla out with the problem issue that they're asking about.
Very interesting. So could the Rav give us an example of both? I mean, Bayer was a good example where someone asked a shayla that could be, is right. Bayer mutter asr? Of course, the answer is asr, but how to do it in a mutter item. Could the Rav answer, since the Rav is saying that a Rav's job is to try to help the person and try to see how it could be done, could the Rav give us an example, let's say, of another case where we would think that this is, you know, mm-hmm. usr, but a Rav who's going to pay attention with the person and take time could explain how to do it in an item that's mutter? And also, in the opposite extreme, in certain cases where the Rav is trying to help the person and maybe he's even machmer, you know, on right. certain cases. I know the Rav learned by a Yidur Isaac Kahana who always says right. in certain cases in Hilchos Yichud, you know, right. he tries to be machmer, especially with younger people, because even though there might be leniences, you know, he says what he, right. you know, what he sees. So they're helping people is by being machmer. Yeah. Well, what are a few examples how a rav takes into consideration helping somebody, and that's how he ends up paskening.
Right. Okay. So I had a few times, sometimes bachur married where in areas of halacha that they might have been OCD. For example, putting a tefillin on, getting into the right spot. So sometimes the rav has to catch on that there's an OCD issue over here, and therefore I have to come across much stronger that this is where it is, and that's it. There's no questions. Let's move on. Or many times the rav has to even send the shayel to this part of getting him help for what he needs. But the way the rav will answer a lot of times will have to do with the situation of the person, and he may come out more in a stronger way when he has to answer to. But I'll give you an example. Yichud happens to be a very good example because of different stories, many stories that we know of, even within our groups and our communities. Many times we have to come out more machmer to the shayel than there are kulis. Sometimes we need to use those kulis, but many times we need to be more machmer. This comes up a lot in Tiras HaMishpacha. Tiras HaMishpacha comes up very often that to certain couples, because of their struggles and because of what they're going through, the rav will have to sometimes be a little more, we'll call mako, but understanding to where they're holding and what they're going through, to give them certain leniencies, which are within the framework of halacha, of course, not being matir and nesurim. But at the same time, sometimes we know that the couple needs to be mechazik themselves in this area. So the rav will have to come across with a certain chumrah b'teres gedder as a gedder to get them to be more to be mechazik in this inyan. In Hilchos Shabbos it comes up very very often. We quoted
before one of the interviews. A Sefer Chassidim. The Sefer Chassidim says in Simon Reish Sadiches that the reason why Beis Hillel wasn't machmer on chumras that Beis Shammai was machmer on, and he's referring to Bedafka, the Yud Ches chumras that the Gemara brings down in Shabbos, the Gzeiris is because he felt that even though he agreed that Siyogim are important, he felt that Kal Yisrael is not ready to accept the Siyogim, and if we're going to tell them to accept it and they're not going to do it, they're just going to give up everything. It's going to be either all or nothing. Does the Rav feel in our generation, where, again, the Rav is answering to hundreds and not even thousands of Americans that are coming to Eretz Yisrael, is the Olam capable of accepting upon themselves chumras? Is for certain people, if the chumras are getting too much, then everything is becoming mutter. Certain people should be kaddish asmei b'mutalok, certain people not. What's the Rav's feeling what the Rav is seeing from the people who are asking questions?
So I feel very strongly that I can't speak for everyone, but for many, many of our shalim, the chumras that there are, and creating new siyagim or new gedarim, it turns them off. And again, not that the rav is being makel or being matter anything which is really usher. But what the Rav is doing is, he's working with them, and through that, many times, the Rav could even give them something which would be called a chumrah, but they're so willing to take it because they feel like the Rav is on their side. The Rav is helping them out in what they're struggling in, or in the area of halacha that they're asking about. I think in general, again, it's hard to answer just a straight-up answer that we shouldn't have siyagim, we should have siyagim, but definitely making the extra siyagin is putting a pressure on a lot of people, which because of that, it's hard for them, many times to accept even the ikar din. When you add these chumis, it just throws them off. So if you come
so
across,
if I'm understanding correct, yeah. If I'm understanding correct, the Rav, yeah. The theme that the Rav keeps on repeating, and the theme is that every single person should have a Rav. When the Rav gets to know a person, he can work with them. So would the Rav be very opposed people sharing psukim that they got from a Rav? I mean, someone naively calls the Rav. Of course, they think they're the healthiest person. They think everything's okay. They get a psak, and now they go repeat it to their friends, not knowing that the Rav might have thought differently about them, and he gave them that psak because he feels this is the only way for them to grow. So as a general statement, is the Rav opposed people sharing their private psakim that they're getting from Rabbanim?
Very much so. And I'll explain that that's one of the chesroinus of our chats and all that is that when a Rav many times gives a certain personal psak for this family, whether it's for this couple, whether it's a chumra or a kula, within moments it's already shared by many other people. And not always was this psak the right psak for everyone. There are certain psakim which are public psakim. But many, many times, it's a personal psak. And the Rav will tell the person, I'm answering you for your situation. This is what you should do. This is, in halacha, that's what you should do. And when they go ahead and they share it, whether it's over a chat or in the park, wherever it may be, it creates difficulty on the Rav in the future to be able to answer because he's worried that even if I give them a very specific heter, which they need, it's just going to spread out to other people who should not be using this heter. So yes, psakim should not be shared unless they know that this is a public psak.
Very, very, very important. So the Rav is saying that people have to understand that they're getting private psakim and a Rav is caring. What would the Rav say to somebody who says, look, I have a Shulchan Aruch. I could also look at a Shulchan Aruch. I went to yeshiva for many years. Here and there, if there's something I don't know, I'll just call a random Beis Hayra. Whoever, I don't know, who's sitting there, that person will answer. What would the Rav say to such a person? What's wrong with that approach, or is that approach okay?
Okay. So there are many areas of halacha, and probably a lot, where it's probably in Mesirah. And for someone who needs an answer on the spot, and he needs to be, which very rarely is that the situation. But someone who needs the answer on the spot, he can look up the Shulchan Aruch, look up the Shibura, and hit the Shulchan Aruch, and he won't go wrong. Look it up and see what the halach is and do it. Or call the Beis Hayra and find out what to do. But many times you can look up the Shulchan Aruch, to look up the Shibura, and the Mesirah may be different than what the Mishnah Berurah. Now, in general, I find that the Mishnah Berurah was written as a pirish on the Shulchan Aruch. It's a mefarish on the Shulchan Aruch. Mishnah Berurah wasn't writing as a psak sefer, and therefore, learning the Shulchan Aruch with the Mishnah Berurah, you're learning pshat in the Mishnah Berurah. You're learning pshat in the Shulchan Aruch, and many times we'll hear from Paiskim or from our Rabbeim that the Mesirah was, that the Minig was differently. The Minig was like this, was like that. And so therefore, it's still important to ask Shadas to Rabbanim. Now, calling these Beis Hayra's and calling these places that they answer questions, a lot of times, again, the person who's answering the question doesn't know your situation, may not even know who you are to ask you certain questions which are important to ask. So if it's just a question of what bracha do you make on potatoes or potato chips, it's okay. But if it's a question which is more than that, it's a question in Taras HaMishpacha, it's a question in even in Hilchos Shabbos many times, there's different different systems and different questions the Rav could ask you or work with you to find out whether it should be Asav Mutar, how you could do it in Asav Mutar. So just calling these places, a lot of times you're not getting the answer which you should be receiving. Again, they serve a purpose for someone who needs the answer on the spot, which really is that what's needed, then okay. But otherwise, a person should have their personal Rav who they feel comfortable with and they're ready to accept a usher from the Rav and they're ready to accept a mutter from the Rav. Some people have difficulties accepting usher. Some people have difficulties accepting mutter. You need to find the Rav that you're comfortable with and be able
what is
to...
That? If I can interrupt the Rav for a second, if I can interrupt, what does that mean, finding a Rav that you're comfortable with? Someone is moving. So let's say someone was born into a community that has a Rav. They had a shul Rav. Okay, so that they were born into that situation. But let's say someone is now moving. If it's moving to Eretz Yisrael, moving to Lakewood, moving, what does it mean finding a Rav? So someone wants to sit down now and they want to decide who's their Rav. What is that process? What should go into someone's head and what should also not go into someone's head before they make such a decision?
So in most cases, they should ask their Rabbein that they have already before they, let's say, going to Eretz Yisrael. Who do you suggest that I should be seeing to in Eretz Yisrael? And usually, hopefully, the Rebbe understands him, and the Rebbe says to him, you belong to this community. This Rav will be Matim for you. Or sometimes, you know your Chevra. Again, you know who your Chevra is, and you're moving to, let's say, to Lakewood. Lakewood has many different Rabbanim all around Lakewood, in Lakewood, next to Lakewood. And you don't know. Yitaka don't know who do you go with your Shabbos to, who do you call, who will you be able to approach, who's approachable and all that. So you know your Chevra. Usually if you ask your Chevra who they speak to, that's the Rav you can go to. But probably it's better to speak to the Rav who you had already, your family Rav or your... or where you're coming from, or some Rebbe of yours, to advise you who to go to in the city you're moving to.
Mm-hmm. So the Rav is saying that everyone has to have a Rebbe, of course, and when you're ready to move on and you're ready to look for a Rav in a Pesach, the Rebbe who knows you should be telling you exactly what you're looking for and who should be your Pesach, who should be Madrich you for the next steps of your life.
And as he obviously understands you and knows you in order to be able to give you that hadracha.
Another interesting question, which is a much more complex, complicated question.
Okay.
There are certain rabbanim known in Klal Yisrael as mekilim. There are certain rabbanim who are known as machmirim. Of course, chas v'shalom, none of the rabbanim who we call mekilim are kal people. They weren't light people who didn't take halacha seriously. They from the biggest Yari Shemayim. And those who were machmer, chas v'shalom, when people throw around the word koyach de'atayra odif, it's not chas v'shalom that they didn't learn the sugya shulchan aruch properly. But there is a split in Klal Yisrael of people who are more mekel, people who are more machmer, people who are in the middle. How does that happen? How does a person looking for a Rav, and he says, oh, I want to find the Mekel, that's the person. Or a person looking for a Rav. Could a person jump? Could a person have two Rav on him? Says, you know what? This Rav in Tarsim Mishpacha is Mekel. This Rav in Hilchus Shabbos is Mekel. This Rav in Hilchus Pesach, and he jumps around. Could he have four or five Rav on him? What takolus could happen if someone doesn't go with the normal system?
Okay, so on the first part, many times there's... We have machlekesim, and both days are brought down in Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch will bring down a Yesharim like this and a Yesharim like that. They're both brought down, or the Shulchan Aruch will pass in one way, the Magen Avraham, Taz will have machlekes and understanding the Shulchan Aruch, which will come out of Nafka Mina Halacha. So a lot of Rabbanim feel that, look, we're talking to B'nai Torah, B'nai Yirei Shemayim. If there's a sad over here that one might be being over on the Isser, Chil Shabbos, or Taiz Mishpacha, or making the wrong bracha. So, be machmir, and let's try to fulfill both, let's try to get in both shittas or just stay away from it and not get involved in the suffering. And that's what we refer to as the machmir, which is mahalach. It's a valid mahalach. Does that mahalach work for everyone? Probably not. There are yechidim that are on the madrig of going with this mahalach, but certain rabbanim feel that for their kila, for their shalom, that's where it should be. The mekilim is not because they feel that we have to be maple. They're giving up the psak that this is the psak, this is the mesera, this is the psak with clarity. This is the psak. And if one will want to be more machmir that inyan, so he'll speak to the rab personally. He'll say, you know what, I want to make a kabbalah that even though it's mutter to, even though it's mutter, I want to make a kabbalah in this area. Even though there's a kosher erev over here, I want to make a kabbalah not to carry here. I want to go like the machmir. The rav told him that it's mutter to carry in this area. I want to be machmir. The rav told him that he could be semichon of Moshe for Chol Stam. He says, you know what? I want to be machmir in this Indian. Now the rav could speak to him and understand him. Is this a good Indian for you to make a kabbalah in? Which kabbalah is always very good for everyone. We have to find which area it will last and which areas we can make a kabbalah in. So the Mako is just telling him that halacha l'maaseh says this is the psak, this is the mesera, this was the minig. Now you want to be machmir, so let's discuss if this is the right place to be machmir. Someone who jumps from one rav to another rav, it's true, he can have a rav in Hilchas Shabbos, a rav in Hilchas Tayis Mishpacha, and a rav in Chosh Mishpat. Even though sometimes halachas do overlap each other and it can get confusing that your kula is a chumra, your chumra is a kula or something like that. And that's why, of course, it would be preferable to have one rub. But nowadays, it's sometimes very hard to find that because we don't have, unfortunately, that many that are became in Dal Chalkei Shulchan. So a person who does choose to have a rub, this is the rub he speaks to in Hilchas Shabbos, this is the rub he speaks to in Hilchas Tayis Mishpacha. Hopefully the rub himself will understand, wait, this overlaps the Chosh Mishpat Shaila, and he'll have to refer to the Chosh Mishpat Rav and work it out together. Did I answer the question?
Perfect answer. So two more questions.
Yeah.
Two more questions. Something that the Rav mentioned, and then something else. The first thing the Rav mentioned is that there are svarim to look into, that paskin halacha. The Rav explained that the Mishnah Berurah feels the mafarish on the Shulchan Aruch. And then the Rav said, and it's important that it might be, you have to find out what the Messiah is in. So it seems like a lot of Psak go after Messiah, and therefore you have to go to Rabbanim who have a Messiah, who learns from a Rebbe. Could the Rav maybe share with us an example of what that means, of a Psak that you would think goes one way, but the Messiah tells you, look, this is the Messiah in Kali Yisrael, how we've been acting, and these are how we've been Makabal from our Rabbeim and our Rebbe. I'm just going to throw out one example that we both one time heard from Rabbi Isaac Kahana.
Yeah,
we know
yeah.
Rabbi Isaac Kahana is very, he takes the Prima Gadim very, very seriously. He calls the Prima Gadim his Rebbe. And the Prima Gadim happens to be Machmer on listening to music on Chalamoy Pesach because of Sfira. Those who hold the first half of Sfira, the Prima Gadim is Machmer. And his daughters asked him one time if we're allowed to listen to music. And he says, look, the Prima Gadim is Machmer, but, you know, he says, I usually go to the Prima Gadim, but find out what the Minig in Yerushalayim is. So he told him to call Rav Bloy. Yeah. I don't know if the Rav remembers this story. So his daughters called Rav Bloy, and Rav Bloy said, oh, you could be Mekel. So they knew enough. They asked. His girls asked, I, the Prima Gadim. So he said, the Minig Yerushalayim is to be Mekel. So they asked him, how do you know what the Minig is? So he said, open up your windows, stick your head out, and you'll hear what's going on in Yerushalayim. You'll hear people are playing music on Chalamoid. What's another example that someone could say, oh, look, if I'm just going to open up a sefer, I'm going to see this is halacha, both l'chumra and l'kula, but the Messiah, the Hug of Kali Yisrael, has been specifically in this way, both l'chumra and l'chukla.
So I'll just give an example that just came up someone just, I was just on the phone with someone, and the mashal, someone's wearing tefillin, and they're davening with tefillin. And now they need to remove the tefillin in order to go to the bathroom. So the mishrura makes a chilek between if you're using the bathroom for gedolim or for ketanim, whether you need to make a new bracha when you put it back on. I always heard from my Rebbe Michal Sherkin, and then now I saw it's printed b'shem of Moshe also, so that he's a Talmud of Moshe, so he probably heard from Moshe, that the meaning is we don't make a bracha when we put back on the tzum, whether it's for gedolim or ketanim. That's an example. Now, I can't say that someone who follows the Mishabur is wrong. Just this is the Messiah I received. And I find this comes up in many areas that the Likud Svarim, nowadays we have Likud Svarim on every Inyan, which is like an encyclopedia on every Inyan. The Bikim, the Chazanish said, our Dar is going to be a Dar of Bikim. And we have many Svarim and thick Svarim on each Inyan that there is, which is beautiful. But again, when one wants to paskin, it can get very confusing if they're seeing so many different sheets. The Hilchos Avelos, it comes up a lot, that there's different sheets, and the question is, where do we go? Who do we follow? So we have Klalim. Every Rav, I wanted to mention that every Rav has to really learn the Klali HaPsak beforehand very well. In Yerideya, there's Yerideya, in Cheshenishba, there are Ramaz, there's a Shach, which goes through Klali HaPsak. And to be familiar with the Klali HaPsak, which takes us back to the point that we said, that sometimes when there's a Rabbim, there's a Yochid, so we're passing with the Rabbim, but there are times when we could be Seimach on the Yochid. There are different Klalim to when we consider something Shasat Chak, when we consider something, comes to Hagim also. The Pichadish brings down in Hilchos Nedarim a list of, I think, over 20 different types of Minhagim. Some of them, which could be Mekel B'di'evit or Shasat Chak. Some Minhagim are considered Neder Shodah Barabim, which you can't even be Matir. Some Minhagim, one could be Matir. So a lot of times the Rav could respond with those klalim to the person and figure out if this is a minig that he could be making, or this is a minig that, that's it. It's accepted minig kidneys. It's accepted minig by minig Ashkenaz. It's very hard to be making, as opposed to Brock, it's easier to be making. Even though we mentioned Mitzvah plays a big role, but at the same time, the Rav also has to know the klalim of Sak.
So I want to end off with an interesting question. The Bir Halacha quotes a Prima Gadim in Tafresh Nun Vav, which says a chiddush that when there's a machlokes apoiskim by a mitzvah essay, so if this esrog is kosher, this esrog is not kosher, or then there's an inyan of zekhili van veyu of hidden mitzvah at shlish to go be machmer like the other poiskim. So if there's a machlokes, let's say Ramosha and Reb Shlomo Zalman, even though this person's always knowing like Reb Moshe, when he's being machmer like Reb Shlomo Zalman, he's being mekayim a mitzvah deraisa of zekhili van veyu. That's the thing. So I understand to go be machmer by a mitzvah essay. Every time you're machmer, you're mekayim a mitzvah essay.
Right.
When a person is machmer on a lois essay, he's not going to do something. What is he being mekayim? So, of course, you know, either he has Yerushimayim, it's a mitzvah binding, he has Yerushimayim, he is afraid of transgressing, and therefore he is going to end up being machmer. So it's not that he's being machmer, it's that he has Yerushimayim. Okay, so then such a person could be scared. He's scared.
Right.
Or we know there's a concept called Milsa de Chassidus, going with Fnim Mishur Sadin. And we know the Mesilas Yisham is Mayrach, and those who go with Fnim Mishur Sadin, he has a parakol Mishkalach Chassidus. They have to be very, very careful, because if not, they're going to make big mistakes. What would the Rav tell somebody who is asking, I want to go be a Machmer now. Why am I being a Machmer? So does the Rav have to discuss, well, do you have Yerushimayim? If you don't have Yerushimayim, then there's no purpose. Or is there a purpose for a person? The Kaddish Atmei B'Mutalach, it's somehow going to change you.
Fascia.
Yeah. Kedoshim. So what by mitzvah essay we see you mekayim zekin leo. By lois essay, are you is that what you're mekayim? You mekayim the kedoshim to you according to the Ramban? What's the purpose of someone being mashmer? I mean, if he goes to his rav, there's a famous machlokes Ramosh and the Chasam Sefer, the Pesukei Tshuva quotes the Chasam Sefer and Kuf Beches. If someone's allowed to be mashmer against their rav, and Ramosh disagrees with the Chasam Sefer. And Ramosh's gather of being machmer, interesting, I think it's a Tshuva in Yerodei Chilik Dalid, where he has Tshuvas on the Simonim. And Ramosh says an interesting gather. He says, if something that Chazal ended up being makel on because of Chazokas, so you don't really know what happened, you don't really know if this animal is kosher or not, but Chazokas tells you that Mestama it's kosher. Dear Ramosh says, you could say, look, I don't want to be Semich on these Chazokas because it's very possible that it's not kosher. But if there's a psak and it's klar, like something bottled with shishim, that it's kosher, Ramosha quotes the Minchas that you're not be curious if you're machmer. Right. So to be machmer seems like it's a complicated sugya. It's a lumdish sugya. Right. So there are takolas, like Mesil Sharm says, there are takolas that could happen to somebody who's machmer, because you could be goyrim, you know, you could be goyrim other problems, he's marich. So someone who comes to the Rav and tells the Rav, look, I want to go be machmer. How's the conversation that the Rav has with him? If it's the person learned that he needs a private Rav and he comes to the Rav and he's saying, look, I want to be machmer in these stuff, how does the Rav talk to him?
Okay, so this happens to be a common question, a common conversation with a lot of people. And like Rabbi Khan mentioned, that it could be coming from many different sources. Here again, I'm going to stress it again. If I know the person, sometimes this is coming from nervous. He's nervous. He's just nervous. He's nervous. He's nervous, and it's the nerves are building on him, and that's why he wants to be machmer. So sometimes, I'll give you an example. Someone calls up with a shayla that they use the fleishig of pot for ABC, for whatever it may be, and la halacha it's mutter. But I know this person's nervous, and so it's not such a big deal to kasher the pot or to kasher the fork or kasher the spoon. So then, you know what, be machmer, just kasher the spoon and everything will be fine. Even though maybe he didn't have to kasher it. That's a small chumah. But when someone's coming, so sometimes that's what it's coming out of nerves. Sometimes it's coming out of your shrine. The Yitaka, he worked through this, sugya, and he feels that he has a nitiya that he wants that this should be an area that he's going to work on, it could be for one of two reasons. It could be because he wants to stay away from the Isser. He was nichshol at one point in this Isser, and therefore he wants to build for himself a geder, a siyag, which is coming from his real self, that this is what he wants in order to prevent from coming to Nichshol, or he was Nichshol in this area now as a tikkun. He wants to be extra careful in this, like sometimes if someone Chas Shalom was Mechal Shabbos in a certain area, or they find that they're constantly being Nichshol in that area, so they'll want to take on a chumra in that area to be extra careful that they won't be Nichshol in the future. Or as a tikkun, we're going to be more careful. Instead of lighting neiris at 18 minutes before, we're going to aim to light neiris and be able to cobble to light a half an hour before shkia. So that will be a tikkun for those times that we missed. We were too close to the zman. The job of the rav really is to ask the person, why do you want to be a cobble? Why do you want to be machmir in this inyan? And then also to make sure that it's a chumrah that he can handle. And if this will affect other people in the family, that the other people in the family will be able to handle. Again, we gave an example before, let's say carrying where there's an eruv. He wants to be machmir, he doesn't carry, which is a valid chumrah. There are many, many shittos in Hilchos Erevin that there's always room to be more machmir, but are you ready for that chumrah, or are you going to regret it in a month from now? That's I usually speak about that. Is this something that you could be mekabel? Is it going to affect your wife, affect your children? If he's ready to be mekabel because he understands why he wants to be machmer, not because sometimes the response will be, Because I know that this and this Rav is Machmer, therefore I want to be Machmer. That's not being Machmer. I once heard Rav Nasa Greenblatt, he gave a shiur by us in Yeshiva, so someone went over to me afterwards and asked him, Rav Moshe writes that not drinking Chol Stam, you're Baal Nefesh shouldn't drink Chol Stam. So Rav Nasa said, not drinking Chol Stam is not going to make you into a Baal Nefesh. A Baal Nefesh doesn't drink Chol Stam. So, again, we're talking about over there the Gedder Baal Nefesh, which may be a separate Gedder, but I think it's a true site. Me being Machmer, because he's Machmer, is not going to make you into that better or more Yorei Shemayim person. But if I, and that's what the Rav feels at, you attack a field that for you, this is a Chumrah, this is a Kabbalah, this is the area that you want to work on, that you want to build your Yorei Shemayim. So the question I would always ask is this going to add Yorei Shemayim to you or not? If it will add Yorei Shemayim, then you on your own should be metabol to be Machmer. But if it's not going to add Yorei Shemayim to you, then find the area that will add Yorei Shemayim to you.
A great shkoyach, Rabbi Wiener, for coming on the show, sharing the Mahalach HaPsak. Again, Rabbi Wiener is the Rav of Zichron of Yitzhiv Ramat Eshkol and the Pesach of ZNT Kashrus, which is American Kashrus. A great shkoyach, Rabbi Wiener.
I just want to say thank you very much for giving me this opportunity. And Rav Khan Bavi, who I got the opportunity to spend so much time with him in Eretz Yisrael, and even when I come back to Chutz Laaretz and the Tziba that he's helping out, I continue learning from him in Tzak. So we should be able to spend many more time together. And again, everyone who's listening should be zeicha that we should be zeicha to the real gula already.
Amen. Shkoyach.
Okay.
Call to.